On today's College Football Inquirer, how might the bowl system change to stay alive, to adapt to the changing times? Plus, the patch wars have begun. That's right, companies advertising on college football jerseys. We've got another very prominent one in the SEC announced this week, and the money's going to the players. Also, Stephen Godfrey on the brain drain. College football coaches headed to the NFL in droves. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. I am Andy Staples with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. And gentlemen, Ross has a story that we got to talk about. The bowl system, the people who run the bowls, trying to figure out how they fit in into the new world. And Ross, you had some really interesting details about some of the ideas they had, and I think they might have been listening to our man Stephen Godfrey when we talked about this a few months ago.
Oh.
Where is my commission?
Your cut? I try to lay it all out here. So, bowl games, and I didn't really know this until recently. I didn't know how bowl games worked, really, when the inside, like, financial issues of bowl games. But bowl games contract with conferences in TV partners in title sponsors. So they have, you know, they have three contracts. And all those contracts for most of the bowls come up this year. But because there's uncertainty around the future of the college football playoff and expansion, they're all rolling those contracts over with their conferences and TV networks. So this year will be normal sort of year of the bowls. But next year, They're starting to really think about, and they have really for the last couple of years, what the future sort of looks like. And really, let's be honest, this is up to the power conference commissioners mm-hmm. and the power conferences in general of what they want to do. And right now they're exploring one proposal, and it's gotten to the level that ESPN has gotten involved. So it's to that high of a level of creating a 10 bowl. A bowl consortium of 10 bowls pitting power conference teams in selling that 10 bowl consortium to the open market and getting rid of the conference affiliation, traditional conference affiliations tied to the bowls, and also getting rid of the fact that the bowls right now control, you know, their TV rights. Mm-hmm. And in the future, this will be like a conference controls the TV rights of the bowls and pays the bowls a management fee. So a lot of changes being talked about there. The big question, of course, would be next is what happens to all the other bowls that aren't P4 versus P4, right? Like
You mean the ones that ESPN all owns?
Mostly owns, right? Yeah, ESPN yeah. mostly owns all those bowls, and it fills a bunch of holiday TV windows. But if the playoff expands by too much, those windows will be somewhat full, number one. And number two, you might not even be able to have this bowl consortium if you expand to 2014. So there's a lot yeah. still up for debate, and a lot of it depends on the college football playoff expansion.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to cry over any of this. As long as I still get football on my TV, I really don't care. I was golf clapping when you mentioned getting rid of the traditional conference affiliations, because you'll find no bigger booster of the Tampa Bay metro area than me. I've lived there. I've worked there. I love it.
You're not even a pro wrestler.
Poor Iowa fan. Well, no, I worked out with the pro wrestlers. I'd be in there and crush from demolition. Look, just walk in.
Let me just say, I think you have a good look. I think you're a little old for like to go through camp. I'm just saying, I would help scout tapes when I worked in the business. You have a good look. Obviously, you've got the height. I know that you can put on mass. Like you could get up there. Like so, mm-hmm. I think honestly, just if we had caught you 20 years ago, a very clear path for you. Yeah.
I could cut a promo.
You're good on a mic. I think like we never had a food critic gimmick. Okay. A discerning, imagine like a barbecue snob, but let's play that out as a heel gimmick where you go and you're actually shutting down local restaurants because the potato salad isn't to your liking. All right.
This is perfect.
I'm waiting for the promo.
This is why you get television executive.
We detoured.
No. This is why Stephen Godfrey should be a television executive and why he had the best idea for the bowl games. So as I was saying, love the city of Tampa, love the Tampa Bay metro area. Always felt bad that Iowa fans just kept getting sent there year after year after year after year after year when maybe they just wanted to go to San Diego one time. And
I don't know. You've been to Iowa in January. I think they'll settle.
True. Tampa's
preferable.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The idea of instead of having these arcane rules, why not just put the best games together to put them on television? They're already doing actually fairly well in the ratings. Imagine if you had even better matchups that you could put together. And remember, you're putting these together 3 weeks before they're played.
Yes.
You can rip from the headlines games. It would be awesome.
Not that I need confirmation bias for my opinions, but when we assembled the whole suggestion segment, what was that, a couple weeks ago, Andy? Was it during
the
bowl season?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, you know what? Hey, in the fall.
Total fugue state once August hits, guys. I called people who worked for successful bowls. I did not call people who worked for bowls that have since been shuttered or are on that sort of Mendoza line of cuts. The people who run successful bowls, and I define success as the ability to create an interesting and compelling live and television product, the ability to sell tickets, and the ability to create good matchups. The first thing every one of them said is, please free us from conference affiliation. Because they want to, and a lot of them actually want to work together. They want to get in a room where the payouts are of a like tier. This is why I mentioned this when I did the suggestion segment. And they just say, hey, okay, guys, so to Andy's point, all right, we had Iowa last year. You know, maybe this coach came over. There's a storyline here. These fans don't, you know, this matchup would draw. We'll trade you X for Y. You guys get Notre Dame next year, whatever it is. Because they're all trying to, again, to borrow from pro wrestling, they're trying to book a great match. This is an exhibition game. This is an exhibition game. So the goal is to create the most compelling 3 hours. The goal of a postseason, a true postseason, is to determine a champion, which is why you suffer through sometimes when you have a bad matchup in a bracket or in the BCS. The goal of an exhibition game is just those 3 hours. And so they all want to get rid of conference affiliation. Even, hey guys, even the ones with good conference affiliation, even the ones who have a deal with the SEC and the Big Ten. Because you know what sucks? A lackluster, crestfallen 6-win South Carolina who's just had a season where they thought they were going to win 9 or 10, and now they're just kind of tumbling into this bowl situation.
Well, so several things to get to that we just were discussed. That one, good segue from there, Godfrey, is that the idea is, at least in this proposal, that it's five schools that don't make the CFP, obviously, five teams from each of the four leagues, right, would be put into this pot for the 10 games. So that means that there's a potential for your bottom schools, maybe like you just mentioned, the South Carolina doesn't want to go to a bowl and they don't have to. They can just not go to a bowl. And so I think there's some flexibility now there. They've also been talking about, like they have for 2 or 3 years, is to move the bowl eligibility from 6-6 back to 7-5. They've been talking about that for like 5 years. That's been an ongoing conversation that I think will continue this year too. And then, so one of the things, back to Andy's point of Iowa, Big Ten, Tampa, one of the issues with this from the Big Ten side, because I've heard from a few of them, is they don't necessarily, they get pretty good bowl spots, right? In Florida, warm, away from, you know, the Midwest and all that. Some of them don't really want to trade those spots for a potential to land in another area that might not be as warm with a beach, say Houston or Nashville or something like that. So they don't really want, so that's actually an issue with this on the Big Ten side from what
that's their fault for living in the cold. Although, here's the thing. You've got Big Ten teams now where they live next to the beach.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a little bit different.
It's true.
You know, different geographical profile. Like UCLA fans, okay, bad example probably. I'm not sure that group exists in mass, although.
No, I've seen pictures of Bill Simmons out there. Yeah, Bill Simmons is a UCLA fan. Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
Well,
I saw that on the internet.
He got a former Holy Cross coach hired at UCLA, so that's why. But.
I'm sure they'll talk about the Patriots.
USC fans. You know, USC fans, they live near the beach. Yeah. I don't think they care about going to a beach in bowl season. I don't think they care about going somewhere warm. It's warm where they are. So maybe they do want to go to Nashville and party on Lower Broadway. Like, I do think that the Big Ten is big enough now that that shouldn't be a concern. The concern should be putting on the best games, as Godfrey so eloquently put it, booking the best match, because that's what really matters. Now, the Big Ten's trying to destroy the bowls anyway because they want a 2014 playoff. And if a 2014 playoff happens, all of these bowls that we're talking about, the quote-unquote successful bowls, they're going to evaporate because the teams that are playing them are going to be in the playoff and they're not going to be needed anymore.
I think they can scale. It's not that hard.
I guess they can work with 25 through 40, 25 through 41, I suppose. 25 through 40. I'm bad at math.
None of us are. Good. That's why we're in sports journalism.
Well, for 10 games, you'd need 25 through
44. To 45. Or yeah. whatever.
What is what is the total inventory of games in a 2014 playoff?
It doesn't matter because the Bulls aren't getting but six of them at the most.
Right.
So, okay.
So what I'm saying
is, for the Bulls purposes, it doesn't matter.
Well, no, I'm thinking along the lines of television inventory and what I said at the very beginning of bowl season is
slots.
We still have to slot for. Remember, we don't want to talk politics with our girlfriend's uncle on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
So Lord, bestow upon us the Hawaii Bowl. Give me a 6-win Cal team in the Hawaii Bowl. None of that has to change. Bowls can still exist as a supplementary piece of inventory. Guys, this is America. We're about to launch another minor league football season in like 5 minutes, okay? The indoor football league is back.
Yeah.
This concept of killing the Bulls is a bunch of histrionic nonsense from people who are watching the comet hit their dinosaur asses, okay? Yes, you're not going to have a fluorescent vest and you're not going to have a massive multi-million dollar payout. But the idea that you will not be allowed to, for some reason, take two teams that aren't participating in the 2014 playoff. Hey, guess what? Here's some math. There's 130 gajillion teams in the FBS, okay? Some of them are going
to
have...
it's not a matter of being allowed to. It's a matter of the market desiring it and paying.
ESPN desires it. We as Americans have shown... Andy, you know this. 49 of 50, you know where I'm going, right? 50 highest rated television programs last year, 49 out of 50 were football. One was the Oscars. Okay, two of those were college football. When you go through 50 to 200, that's when you start to see college football. Television networks, as long as we are watching television in a group setting, there will be slots for football. People will prefer football over every other sport. Until that changes, there will be room for, let's say, can we do 10 bowls? How about 10 really good exhibition matches? Keep saying
that would be great. And it's the 10 we're talking about here. 23 games in the 2014 playoff.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's what I was about to say.
You.
Yeah.
I was counting and doing math and it was not pretty.
So,
and
how many 8, 4, 2, 1, yeah. I think.
Correct.
And when I got into, when I became a national reporter years ago, there were 40 odd bowls? 40?
Well, the height
like
was 43 a couple years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it was 43.
Yeah. So I think 10 to 12. I think 10 to 12 very well positioned and well crafted exhibition games that work in television slots as supplementary viewing. I definitely look. ESPN is not going to get any smaller, right? In terms of the amount of inventory it's trying to broadcast, so I don't see the problem here.
Yeah, I and it's interesting because I think you would be worried about maybe antitrust concerns if there were more networks that wanted to be involved in this. But ESPN is really the only one that wants to. I guess CBS loves broadcasting the Sun Bowl and Fox loves broadcasting the Holiday Bowl. But like ESPN is really the only one doing this.
Yeah.
And so they've got to figure out how to sell it best to them.
All but three bowls that we said. It's like all but three are on ESPN.
And then and Arizona Bowl has bounced around.
Streamed. They were streamed for a while. That's when I was talking to some former and current TV people, asking them how much this 10 bowl consortium would be valued at, number one. And number two, would it have any other bidders? And most of them are like, probably not any other bidders that would get close to ESPN just because they have to fill these windows and they've been having him for so long, they wouldn't want to let them go, you know?
Yeah,
so it would be hard.
It's important to ESPN. Like this new conglomerate, so Skydance is the Ellison
pending regulation. It does have to get regulatory approval, and it may involve spinning off some of the smaller streamers to do that.
Right. And but the idea is that they're getting all of the Warner Brothers content, so that it'll be Paramount merging with HBO Max if you're talking about your two apps, but also, you know, that's Turner, so your Turner networks, TNT, which does some sports. CBS is under Skydance now. They do college football. Like, would they want to do something like that? Would they want to get involved? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's one that I would pay attention to. Do you guys know what Versant is? V-E-R-S-A-N-T, Versant. Mm-mm. That was spun out of the NBC Universal Consortium. So just the other day with the Skydance merger so we're talking about Skydance. What we're actually saying is, like, if you're a kind of a movie fan, Paramount and Warner Brothers are going to get together. And that includes a lot of stuff. So that's like CBS Sports and DC Comics.
The NCAA
and
tournament.
Harry Potter, the NCAA tournament rights. And okay. So the belief is, now we are not the tail that wags the dog here in college football. Those are our friends over on the NFL show. But the NFL should be able to trigger an opt-out clause on its negotiation starting as early as 29, which I know 29 doesn't feel close if you're listening to this, but what I really need to impart on everybody, and Andy Staples taught me this when I was a junior reporter, television deals start getting negotiated about 2 to 3 years in advance. So what Versant said in the wake of the merger was, hey, this is kind of strange too for public positioning. They said, you know what? With everything that's shaken on, we think we might want to step into some major sports. So if the NFL were to manipulate their overall survey of where they put their rights, and keep in mind, guys, we're talking about potentially Apple getting involved with the NFL, Netflix increasing its inventory. And so if things shift dramatically, go back to what I said earlier about 49 of the 50 top live television events, whatever we're still going to call television in the future, people want inventory, they want football. And so I could see some of these newer players in the arena coming in to suck up some of this inventory in college football.
And it's interesting that you put it that way, because one of the biggest, most important deals, television deals, in the history of college football happened because of what you just described. Because somebody else jumped into NFL bidding and took the NFL away from somebody. So remember what we always say, Stephen Godfrey. It always goes back to reading The Club, the book about the Premier League.
Yes.
What did the Premier League teach Rupert Murdoch? That premium television sports content is king.
Yeah.
Emboldened Rupert Murdoch to bid on the NFL. Fox took the NFL away from CBS because CBS didn't think anybody would bid that much. Fox basically doubled CBS's bid for the NFC and left CBS with nothing. What did CBS do to replace that nothingness with that money left over that they were going to spend? They made a deal with the SEC, which turned out to be one of the best deals in the history of sports.
Yeah. Yes. And that's the cascade effect that I was referencing earlier. So, yeah.
How much just of this 10 bowl power conference consortium they're talking about? So I'm not talking about all the other bowls, which, by the way, right now in the 40 bowl lineup, I think 12 or 13 bowls pit power conference programs together. You're talking about 10. So it's not too far away from what we sort of have now. And then all the other games where there's six for the CFP, and that leaves around like 19 or 20, I think, for a group of six bowls, some of which pair group of six power conference, not very many. But my question, go back, is of the 10, how much is that worth? You know, and I was trying to get that from a lot of people. And what I ended up doing is I just added up all of the payouts that those 10 bowls pay out to conferences, which, if you're wondering about those 10 bowls, they're the Gator in the Citrus, in Houston, in Vegas, in Alamo, in Holiday, in Nashville, and there's a couple others in there I've left off. But their whole payout totals around like $50 million. I don't know if that's high or low for a TV network. I'd be curious to know how much ESPN would pay for the 10 power conference.
I mean, I think that question relies on the quality of the programming, which goes back to, we've got to break up some of these just nonsensical requirements that we used in the dark ages.
Also, the playoff has to be decided on. because that changes the math on it as well.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a reason to, again, reiterate, you do not need to figure out the playoff until you figure out conference alignment, what everything looks like, then do the playoff, then do the bowls,
then do the
and
bowls,
sell
right.
it all at once because you're leaving money on the table. The regular season and the postseason need to be sold together.
Yeah.
In these models that we're projecting, are we including high tier bowls still as semifinal slots? Like the Cotton, the Rose, the Sugar, the Peach, et cetera?
Oh, yeah. We are? Yeah, they're remaining as quarter in semifinal. Yeah.
We don't have to.
They should.
We don't have to do that.
They are, for now, they are remaining that way. One of the things is the cost of the 10, to get back to that, the value of the 10 needs to be high enough for schools to agree to continue to play in them, basically, for one, right? So whatever that number is, you know, I mean, they can't continue to lose money going to bowl games, right?
They're not losing money going to bowl games. It's an accounting trick. Because that's what these people do.
They play a lot of...
Is tell you they're losing money when they're not.
Yeah, if they were really losing
money, they would never do it.
Yeah. Wetzel, it's one of my favorite chapters in Wetzel's book, Death of the BCS, was that they pulled apart the accounting of how a school claims they take a loss on bowls. And on top of that, the bowls are going to have to come off of some of their nonsense. Look at me using PG terminology. Such as requiring the university. This was always a fun one I learned from Wetzel's book all those years ago.
Buy tickets.
The school requires
buy tickets for the band.
Yeah.
Premium-priced tickets for the marching band.
Yeah. Yeah.
That means the school has to pay like $275 per marching band member to sit in an otherwise empty NFL stadium.
Well, also remember that how many schools, probably all of them, give coaching bonus bowl bonuses, right? How many of those total up?
Sure.
Millions and millions and millions of dollars. So, but as you guys know, with everything, right, all these schools are looking at every single component. And Andy, you mentioned like they wouldn't go, right, if they lost money. Well, a few of them, certainly a lot of them don't want to go anymore. And a few of them have actually said publicly, we're not going to that bowl. We saw it this year. So
exactly.
I think we're getting to that point.
That's
fine. To that
the margins are slimming, and that's understandable. I'm glad you mentioned, Ross, schools trying to figure out how to maximize their revenue or minimize their losses. Because we are going to talk next about another revenue stream that schools are using to now pay players. The jersey patch sweepstakes has begun in earnest. We've now got our first mega booster company teaming up with a school. We'll talk about it next. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and gentlemen, the jersey patch sweepstakes is here. We had LSU, but it was with a company from New Zealand or Australia or somewhere. It's a petroleum company. It's doing business in Louisiana, trying to curry political favor. No fun. No fun there. Arkansas has what we were really thinking about. Tyson Foods will be putting patches on 19 Arkansas teams' jerseys, all 19 jerseys. Tyson Foods, of course, an Arkansas-based company, a $53 billion a year company run by Arkansas mega fan John Tyson. And 90% of the money from this deal, according to Arkansas, will go directly to the athletes. And so this, if you're wondering how the rev share cap affects things and then how you can then give money above the rev share cap, well, guess what? Tyson Foods is a very large company. And who are you, CSC, to tell us who can advertise our chicken?
Yeah, that's right. This is a great and legal way to get players more money above the cap, right? It's we were seeing it maybe not as public with apparel brands. We've talked about the Adidas situation and all that. And we're going to see a wave of schools striking deals with big sponsors for jersey patches, where a portion of the money. Now, some schools might not do exactly what Arkansas is doing, where 90% of it goes to the athletes, but I'm guessing schools will use quite a bit of it to go to athletes. And this is, depending on how they filed the deal with the clearinghouse, and we can get into all that later. We have a story on that. But like, depending on how they filed the deal, you got a big old brand, and even though they're an associated entity, because they're a booster, obviously, this is a hard one to deny if you're the clearinghouse.
Yeah, a lot Tyson of this Foods stuff is a massive company. For those who don't, like, let me contextualize this. Tyson Foods annually is bigger than the entire industry of college football by several orders of magnitude.
Yeah. A lot of people eat chicken.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good protein source.
Yeah. I bet I eat a half a chicken a day. I'm giving a lot of money to Tyson, and Tyson's giving that money to Arkansas athletes. So you're welcome. You know, here we are.
Exactly. But
one of the things
Yahoo reporter claims to be Arkansas booster.
I'm an associated entity because they eat a lot of chicken.
Except the vegetarians.
So I wonder how much the deal is worth. Now, it was sort of reported that it's one of the biggest deals or the biggest deal. That's kind of an interesting way to put it, right? Because we haven't seen a lot of these deals yet, and they haven't been struck. They're going to be struck over the next few months, especially. But when you talk to people in the industry about how much a jersey patch is valued for a company, they'll usually stay, it depends on the brand of the school, but like at the very top, Alabama, right? You know, is, at least from what I've been told, is around $6, $8, $10 million annually. A football program is what I've been told. Now, but if you're a booster, and this is where it gets fascinating, if you're a booster, wouldn't you say like, to me, it's worth $30 million, right?
So I got Alabama fans mad at me yesterday because we talked about this on my On Three show. And it was actually, I had been a guest on a show in Birmingham called The Next Round Live. And they were talking about this and they were saying, you know, does it constitute an unfair advantage for Arkansas? And I said, guys, like, what are we talking about? Unfair advantage for Arkansas. Hasn't Arkansas been through enough? And
do you think these companies weren't involved in the football team before this?
Well, exactly. Tyson Foods, Walmart, they've had some advantages they haven't exactly taken advantage of. But what one of the hosts, Lance Taylor, explained to me, and it made a lot of sense, is, hey, this is an Alabama-based show. This is the sort of thing that Alabama's been worried about is – They don't necessarily have the in-state sugar daddy company that some of these other schools might have, or you know, the connected company like Memphis and FedEx are very connected. And you know, Memphis, in terms of value to a company as an advertising vehicle, is nowhere near what Alabama is, and Arkansas is nowhere near what Alabama is. So that's and it's funny because the Alabama fans got mad. They're like, don't you know we're going to get a good... You're going to get a very big company. You're probably going to get... Like, I think Mercedes would be a perfect partner for Alabama. Mercedes Maybe. Has a big plant in Tuscaloosa. It's a huge brand. Yeah. Because I do think, like, the value of on the Alabama or the Ohio State or the Michigan jersey for 3.5 hours, that is a massively valuable piece of property.
Be interesting to see, though. You know, I don't doubt the perceived ROI of exposure for one Tyson Foods appearing on the jersey of Arkansas.
$53 billion company doesn't need a ton of exposure. Anyway.
No, that's what I'm getting at is that there's an emotional conduit there between Tyson and Arkansas. I'd be terrified if I was a Bama fan because guess who doesn't care as much about paying players or winning football game? The Germans, Andy.
Yeah.
Mercedes has other things to do.
I disagree. The Adidas people seem pretty interested in it.
Those are different Germans.
Different Germans? Okay. They're more interested in sports than efficiency. But the thing is, Alabama can command McDonald's. They can command like a massive company. Massive company. And that's and that's what I wanted to ask you, Ross, because you know this really well. Do you think that would allow them to get in the same universe as, say, a company where the founder, or not the founder, but the person who runs it, maybe, I don't know, personally bankrolled the hiring of the basketball coach of the school, as what happened with John Tyson in Arkansas?
Yeah, I would be very curious of how much scrutiny that the College Sports Commission will be giving, or NIL Go will be giving, the sponsorship, jersey sponsorship that comes from a booster that's so involved. That's going to be sort of fascinating there. And I'm dying to know too the value, complete value of the deal.
I'm sure it'll go great, Ross.
If it's 8 million, that is probably about right.
That seems about right.
If it's 30 million, then it's a different.
That seems a little inflated. Yeah.
We need the context. Now, here's the question, guys. These deals are already in the works. Like, we're gonna get a flood of these here in the next few months. Like Ward Manuel, the Michigan AD, he said that they're open to it. Which means, like, I would think Michigan's uniform would be the most sacred.
Please do dominoes.
Please do dominoes.
I think after the Dave Brandon times,
that's the bit. Don't explain the joke. That's the bit. think about the average snottiness of that fan base, and they're trotting out there with maybe there's like a QR code for like a 50% off on Fridays kind of situation at Domino's.
Now you're getting into the Coke bottles. Hail when Dave Brandon victors. Was there for free tickets.
Yeah, baby. How about
Ford on a Michigan jersey?
Boring. Ford. Also, hey, Handy, you bring up something really fun, which is what I'm waiting for, which is Clash, Color Contrast Clash. This is going to look awful. So if you're an MLB fan, you already know this has started to creep into MLB. And as a Braves fan, I can tell you that I love the fine people at QuickCrete. It's a great product. I've used it in my personal time using QuickCrete. It's bright yellow. And that patch on the sleeves for the Braves, it's pretty hideous.
Are you
insinuating the yellowwood patches on the Auburn jerseys are going to clash a little bit?
So I was going to go with the different. I already checked the difference in Pantones between the Pilot truck stop orange and the Tennessee Vol orange. But let me tell you something. We're going to get some garish representations here soon, buddy. I mean, it's going to be.
Are they all going to use their colors? Are they going
to? I would use team colors. Because you're just going to piss everybody off. Because
you can't.
You can't.
If it hurts your brand, it hurts your logo brand and all your brand.
As someone who owns his own production company and deals with sponsors and deals with advertisers, they don't want to blend in. They want to stand out. They don't care what your team color is.
Right.
You've got to adhere to them, baby.
I think it depends on the team. I think if you're trying to do a jersey patch at Michigan or Penn State, you're going to have to, as the company, be willing to have it blend in a little more seamlessly.
We'll see.
If you were
depends
doing
on how much
it
money you want
somewhere else. Well, exactly.
Andy, if Chevron went to A&M or Shell or anybody and said, "We're going to put our logo as it appears on every gas station in America."
I'm thinking Yeti.
Because Yeti's got Chevron money, dog.
No, not even close.
That's what I'm saying. But what if Chevron
Yeti
says,
"Hey, Aggies?"
I'm sure they are. It feels very Aggie adjacent. But I'm saying if you went in or Bluebell ice cream, again, not really oil money there, folks. If Chevron came in and said, "We're going to put a red, blue, and white patch on every Aggie uniform and we're going to pay you some gobsmacking amount of money," guess what? They're going to do it. Hey, guys, we're becoming soccer. I just want to say that at least once every episode to make various red state.
Can Texas be Tito's vodka? Like that was my other question. Like, can you have? I don't think anybody's going to have a casino, although some people have a casino on their field or their court. I think Arizona's field is named after a casino.
I don't think
we'll
see alcohol. No, I don't. No. That would be pretty funny, but I don't think
Texas
we'll see
Longhorns
alcohol.
Tito's vodka patch would
be
spectacular.
Godfrey will love this. Last week in Indianapolis at the NCAA Football Oversight Committee, they spent a long time, or maybe the Rules Committee, one of the committees, spent a long time on where you can place the patch on the jersey. Like it was
important.
Like center or left
important
or right
things.
Or arm
don't,
or
don't
so
cover
it's
up
like
the Nike
multiple
logo.
And hour the, long conversation.
Yeah, what's Oregon
mad
do?
About this? Yeah, for people who are mad about this, understand that these people have been walking billboards for decades now already. I remember like 10 years ago, I counted how many Nike logos were on the average player in a game, and it was like 12.
Yeah. That was the exception, right? Your apparel brand deal could be on your logo could be on your jersey, and now we'll have one more. And I think they passed where the conference can have one. as right. well, a conference sponsor. So you actually could have two.
Oh, oh, now we're getting to NASCAR territory. Oh,
yeah, boy. I believe that. That's it, though. That's it. No more. I think our lovely our producer TJ. I've been thinking about this one of each one of us three.
Yep.
To figure out, like, if we had our jersey, you well, know, what kind of
TJ
patch we could have.
Who went
on
to
ours.
Oregon yeah. just suggested, like, a second yeah. Nike logo for yeah. Oregon because,
yeah, I mean,
a bigger yeah. swoosh.
What if there were hundreds of Nike logos and they were little tiny ones?
Embedded.
Like, so it made, yeah, you just,
yeah.
yeah,
you couldn't really see them, but they were, you know, on
instead
the
of the Buckeyes on the helmet, it's yeah. just all swooshes. Yeah.
That's it. There you go. Perfect.
Mine is not particularly funny, but it's actually sitting next to me that I would do. It's the only brand that I consciously represent, and that is, it's on my backpack, Carhartt, which would also be a good, I don't know if they're Michigan boosters, Andy, but they are a Michigan-based company. I wear Carhartt stuff all the time. So send me stuff, Carhartt.
On the On3 show, we got into, because there's a lot of companies based in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And so the Badgers are going to have their pick, but like Culver's, Johnsonville.
Yep.
There's a lot. And we said, like, would Culver's do the red and white, or would they want to stick with the blue? I don't know.
Yeah. Ole Miss, by the way, just to think of my alma mater for a second, they've kind of already done this, it, just without the actual arrangement with the Realtree, the camouflage, the hunting company, where they have the Realtree helmets that they break out. They call it ice blue, which is that sort of camouflaged white and blue.
Ole Miss should have the name of the judge who granted Trinidad Chambliss an injunction. Maybe have his picture or something on one of the sleeves.
That might, Andy, I screwed up. There's an obvious sponsor for the Aggs of Texas A&M. And in the moment the patch hits, these jerseys will sell out. Can you take a guess? It's a place where it's a place where you can dine.
Bucky's.
It's a place where you can relieve yourself in an incredibly sanitary environment.
That's a good Oh my God, the Bucky Beaver on there.
I might buy a Texas A&M
out,
jersey with a Bucky Beaver
sell out in
patch
seconds.
On it.
That would be amazing.
It would actually probably increase.
Yeah.
The
value
sales.
Of the yeah, that's
Bucky's
right.
By the founder, way, here it says his name is Arch Beaver Applin, folks. His name is Arch. Look,
his name's not Bucky.
I don't
no,
know
they call
the
him
Bucky
Beaver.
Comes from.
Yeah, they call him Beaver. Yeah,
no. I thought that was Bucky.
I got to go. Oh my God, this man's
no, their basketball coach's name is Bucky.
Oh,
this man's facial hair. Oh man. Wow.
So Godfrey's having Carhartt on his? Is that what you said?
Definitely.
Carhartt
yeah.
for the Michigan, for the Wolverines.
Okay. Yeah, as a long
I think
time
I have
Michigan
a beanie,
supporter.
A Carhartt beanie. Wait, is this a Carhartt beanie? No.
No.
No. No. I dude, definitely
you,
have
you
one.
You can see
it
the
is,
logo
it
in
is
the
one
camera.
Of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, now, Ross, look, this brings into play another story that you just wrote.
Yes.
Your On3 column this week is about the CSC, which is in charge of policing the outside the rev share deals, the traditional NIL deals. Well, what's the latest on that? Because this is going to affect that.
Yeah, the there's a law firm, Winston & Strawn, which is where Jeffrey Kessler, the lead attorney.
Smells like $1,800 an hour.
One of the lead attorneys in the House case and the plaintiff's attorneys. And the plaintiff's attorneys are charged with, like, overseeing, right, everything that relates to the House case and the rev share and the clearinghouse to make sure that the conferences in the College Sports Commission and the NCAA's not doing anything outside the boundaries, right? So they're kind of overseeing this thing. They have management of it and oversight, and they have they've gotten a little bit involved, you know, in and out of the last few months. And recently, they are scrutinizing the delays in the clearinghouse. Some deals have been in for a long time and not been cleared, and some of the big football rejections in the clearinghouse. So basically, Winston & Strawn has sent emails to stakeholders, specifically like collectives, asking them for examples of what are the delays you're seeing, and do you have deals that have been rejected that you don't think should have been rejected? So we're going to see where this goes. I think the College Sports Commission has told Winston & Strawn, will bring us examples, right? So we can explain them, or we can maybe change our process a little bit. You know, at the very severe level, if this gets to the point where Winston and Strawn think that the College Sports Commission and NIL Go is denying deals that should have been approved, or they should be approved quicker, I think that you will see a report back to the court, and the court basically telling the College Sports Commission or NIL go, you have to change your process. So we might see that at the end, or we'll just see a resolution happen like we did in July between the attorneys in the College Sports Commission. But Andy, back to your point, there are millions of dollars right now from basically the portal and all the re-signings of players, football players. There are millions of dollars in potential waiting to be approved, right, in the NIL go. And we haven't seen an arbitration yet, which is what happens when a player chooses to go to arbitration if his deal is rejected. We haven't seen that yet. I have a feeling we're going to see that. We're going to see that in the next month or two. We're going to see arbitration, and that's where things could get quite interesting. And we'll find out if the CSC is going to sort of stand long term or not.
Can we just speed run to the trial?
Yeah,
I'd be fine with that. Yeah.
Because all of us who watched this all unfold and said, you know, this is never going to work long term.
Yeah.
It's not going to work long term. We know it.
Yeah.
Let's just move on to the end and stop pretending.
People need to
be employed and you know, draw a paycheck for this. So
I got to figure out we got to figure out a new way to react to this, Andy. We're starting to like picking lottery numbers or something.
Well, here's the thing. We don't have to. The schools want to be able to pay the players, whether they admit it or not. They claim to want rules about it. Then with the right hand, they say we want some rules. And with the left hand, they're like, let's sign a deal with Tyson Foods so we can funnel some more money to the players. Guys, they want to pay them.
Hey,
they want to pay them, but they want to. So let's just let them do what they want to do.
What if like Chip and Joanna Gaines, what if it was an all shiplap uniform for Baylor? Does that joke work on this show?
I'm going to give you guys proper credit, but I'm telling you right now, I'm going to have an on-three column where I try to match the perfect sponsor with every team.
Oh, no, no,
and
no.
With every team, I like
these
that.
Jokes are free,
I like that.
The Chip and Joe shiplap Baylor. Like a shiplap helmet for sure.
Hey, Andy, this one, like, I know everyone's going to go, oh, Kentucky, Maker's Mark. No. Actually, the bourbon industry is in dire straits. Here's what's going to happen. Right, in three or 4 years, you're going to have Kentucky's going to play one or two home games a year in a jet black or like anthracite uniform with blue, and it's going to be brought like blue accents, and it's going to be brought to you by the Friends of Cole. Guarantee it.
Oh, 100%.
Friends of Cole has a tag because I live so close to the Kentucky border. I see it all the time. Friends of Cole has like a license plate that you can get. It's mainly East Kentucky, obviously, because that's where the Cole be. And they are historically, I don't know if things have changed. We haven't talked about the Barnhart resignation on here. I have a theory, Andy, that he like lived just long enough to kill his enemy, Mark Stoops. And then as soon as that was over, he's like, I have nothing left to AD for.
Mark Stoops was his enemy.
Barnhart and Stoops? Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yes. Oh, are you kidding me? That was like soap. Oh, that every year that was a soap opera. Anyway,
But that was also when Cal was involved too. So
I know. I think Barnhart was like, I outlived them both. I'm good. I'm done here. I can fade.
He's
off
not
like
done.
A
four, he's getting $1 million a year.
But he's not AD. He's like a force ghost. He just disappears. Anyway, Friends of Cole, black uniform in Kentucky. It'll be probably a hot second before Northrop Grumman. You're gonna have various Defense Department contractors in here. I'm trying to think what the Saudis are gonna. The Saudis are gonna
even,
have a team.
I can't
really
even remember. This is how nondescript it is. The energy company that signed with LSU. That is a political play.
That company would be bankrupt in two years. Yeah,
that's a weird one. I would not have guessed that for LSU. Right? I would have guessed walk-ons or
Crazy Canes.
You know,
Our Lady of the Lake.
I knew that was coming.
They might as well get a patch. They should get some.
I tell you what, mine would be. We mentioned Makers earlier. I would love to. My jersey patch would be the Makers like bottle top. You know, I would like that.
With paint.
My jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little paint.
How do you do this?
Yeah.
I like that a lot, Ross. Okay. How do you do this in Miami if you're just in the import-export business? I mean, the whole point is that you don't want to advertise, right? I mean, that's tough.
With a roll-up dollar bill?
That's true. Yeah.
There you go. I mean, the uniforms are already white.
U-Health? Miami would have U-Health? Miami would have the university health.
They would definitely have
hospital
you
on there. You health on there.
Yes, when in I fact, think they Miami, really might, I think
I
mean, healthcare.
I haven't talked to anybody down there, but I wouldn't be surprised if.
Well,
yeah, they do have a U Health.
Go fast
on there.
Boats. Go fast boats.
As former University of Florida President Bernie Matchin once told me.
Yeah.
You got to take care of the docs and the jocks. If you do that, everything else takes care of itself.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
That's
yeah,
happening. Yeah. And it's funny because I was trying to figure out what Florida is, but now realistically, it's UF Health. UF Health will be, I can almost see it on the
jersey. You think
right
Florida
now.
States is going to be just like a collection agency?
Spanx. The Spanx founder graduated from
I don't
Florida
know.
States.
I don't know who. I don't know which joke was meaner just now, but we'll let the viewers decide.
I went legit on mine. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the brain drain in college football. Obviously, assistants, head coaches in college football have wanted to leave for the NFL for various reasons over the years, but it is ramping up because, let's be real, the NFL job is easier and pays the same. We'll talk about it when we come back. We're back to College Football Inquirer and a topic that has grabbed Stephen Godfrey's interest over the last few weeks. He has been watching carefully as various college coaches have decamped to the NFL. And obviously, college coaches have moved to the NFL and NFL coaches have moved back to college over the years. But it does seem like the desire to get out of college and get to the NFL is much greater now. And Godfrey, can you enumerate for us What we're looking at in terms of folks going and coming?
Yeah, I've watched with great interest and passion, but not great enough interest or passion to actually take notes. So what I did yesterday in advance of this segment was I just hit up someone who's far more responsible than me, and that would be On3 reporter Pete Nagos, and I just said, "Hey, what's that list at right now? I know you're keeping one.
Yeah,
look,
yeah.
if you're gonna copy homework on the school bus, get you a smart one, okay?" So I have in our little show group chat, every time I see a particular or hear about a particular change of a collegiate assistant going to the NFL, I have jumped in there and said, brain drain. This is actually born out of a conversation I had with an individual in Charlotte at the AFCA convention, which was what, like 2 months ago, times a flat circle, blah, blah, blah. And that individual pointed it out and really hit upon, because he worked in coaching for a little bit and might work again. He said, man, look around. Everybody here is exhausted. Everybody here is miserable. Everybody looks like expletive inserted. And he wasn't wrong. One of the things that I've noticed is just anecdotally and talking to the sources that I have and just checking in with people, if college coaches get any chance, any shot, any hint at going to the pros, they are taking it almost 100% of the time. Again, anecdotally, that's not to say that NFL assistants aren't coming to college. We have a couple of those on our list, but it's about a 3-to-1 right now of notable individuals who are moving up. Now, Andy, there's a couple directions we could take this, because there's also the matter of the fact that now the NFL seems to be rewarding this career path, or at least maybe verifying or giving the bona fides to a more collegiate mindset and a coaching acumen, because you've got Jeff Hafley, who famously fled Boston College to go become the defensive coordinator of the Packers. He's now head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Todd Monken, who has spent a significant amount of time in the NFL as coordinator, offensive coordinator of the Ravens, but we, of course, know him as a former Southern Miss head coach, Georgia offensive coordinator on a national championship team. So what you're seeing is, I think, two things. One, the quality of life sucks in college, greatly different than the NFL. We've touched on that before on our show. And second, I think the wall is never been more down. I think there is no more wall between the ideological sort of bias between, oh, well, that guy's a pro coach and that guy's a college coach.
Yeah, they're not nearly as snobby about it. Now, it's interesting because two of the examples here of recent college coordinators who are now NFL head coaches, Jesse Minter, who just became the Ravens head coach. He was the Michigan defensive coordinator under Harbaugh, and then Harbaugh took him to the Chargers. Also, Mike McDonald, the coach of the current Super Bowl champions, the Seattle Seahawks, he was a Harbaugh defensive coordinator at Michigan and then went back to the NFL. Now, McDonald, when he came to college, felt like it was sort of on loan. It felt so he was working for John Harbaugh with the Ravens, and it felt like they sent him to college to learn to call defenses and then come back to us, which is what they did. They replaced Wink Martindale with him. And I think that's very interesting to see, because they were very snobby about it for a long time in the NFL. Like, you're a college coach, you don't know what you're doing. Now, I think they like the flood of ideas, because the NFL has gotten a little stale in terms of trees. It's like, Shanahan tree, McVay tree.
Yes, it's not quite in the weird arrested development spot that college is, where we're trying to figure out what that next Meyer or Saban tree is going to be. And we kind of think it's coming out of Oregon right now. We're not entirely sure. I want to go back to an anecdote. I think I've already provided it once on the show, but people get a lot. There's a lot of pushback from college fans on this. And they're like, well, you know, they're paid so well, they get to do all this. And I go, guy, how would you feel if you saw a college assistant for your favorite team out enjoying his life in the middle of October? You would be pissed that he was not getting ready.
You hit the message board immediately.
Exactly. So I'm going to give you a quick anecdote. So I live in Nashville. It was a couple Titan staffs ago. I actually just went to a fundraiser trivia night at my kid's school. And we had, at the time, two assistant coaches on the Titans were parents at the school. I saw one of them in public on a Friday evening before a home game at like 8 p.m. at a fundraising event, having a normal life, sitting there talking, eating, conversing, socializing, not doing any football things.
Wow.
In October. How dare that SOB? So crazy. I actually texted a college head coach on the way back, and I was like, hey, I saw this guy tonight. Isn't that crazy? And he goes, I would love to do something like that. I would love to go to like a kid's school function. I would love to go out. He said, I would love to just go. And I know I could, in terms of workload, go have dinner with my wife at a restaurant. And I absolutely will not do that from August until February. So that alone, that anecdote alone, should sort of scientifically convince everyone why life in the NFL is better. You live in a major city, too. That's another huge consideration, right? Even I don't care how hardcore of a Philadelphia Eagles, Green Bay Packers fan you are. Right now, gun to your head, do you know the name and do you know what your defensive line coach looks like, or your special teams coach, or your assistant strength coach? In Tuscaloosa, you are living in a fishbowl in perpetuity. So all these things add up, combined with the fact that the personnel is completely screwed. You're constantly recruiting. You're constantly being forced to tamper. Shout out to Ole Miss and Clemson. This is a nonstop workload. A lot of it is actually going to get you in trouble by some sort of rule set. You guys, do you know what they do in the NFL? They coach and they watch film and they coach some more. And as soon as the game is over, win or lose, they get on the bus to go to the really nice plane to go home, and they watch more film, and then they go coach and they see their kids.
And we're going to see more of that. Now,
maybe one day, though, college will be more like NFL. They'll have an NFL-type calendar. They'll have collective bargaining, you know, all that fun stuff.
None of those people you talk to want that, Ross.
Yeah. It's not going to happen.
They're fighting that as hard as they can. The fact that they heard you say that, they're cutting you off now. How dare you, Ross?
They get some nasty calls later.
Now, you do get a little bounce back, though. It's interesting. I mentioned Wink Martindale, who just spent 2 years as Michigan's defensive coordinator. He's not there anymore. But like Rich Bisaccia, I think I'm saying that wrong.
Good enough.
Long time, great special teams coach in the NFL, is now the special teams coach for Clemson. And he just left a job in the NFL. I believe he got let go by the Packers. And so he is now going to be Clemson's special teams coach, which sometimes it's nice to get it the other way and get some people who've seen things a little bit differently, seen what it takes to succeed at the highest level and can help in college. It's interesting because there's two ways of that. You have the Bill Belichick, where they came in kind of with a little snobby attitude about it. Like, hey, these morons in college don't know what they're doing.
A little.
Okay, a lot. And they were quickly disabused of that notion that, oh, maybe they do have some idea of what they're doing. Maybe they're a lot better at putting together rosters than we are.
So Mike Lombardi's about to figure that out. I don't know about Belichick. Yeah, Andy, that hire at Clemson was really interesting to me, just because, you know, Dabo has a less than stellar record of embracing concepts or ideas from outside of his little clique. I mean, you look at what just happened to the offensive coordinator situation, him bringing dusting Chad Morris back off. I think Clemson would benefit from having an NFL mind, a veteran, successful head coach come in and introduce some new concepts. That's not the open-minded laboratory of ideas that you might find somewhere else in college.
Yeah, Rich Bisaccia, interestingly enough, like back to his roots, kind of. He initially, as a very young coach, was a college assistant in the state of South Carolina. was the assistant who recruited Steve Tannehill to South Carolina, the late great quarterback. So speaking of coaches who coached in college and went to the NFL, I would like to pay a little tribute to the man who coached college football most of his life, did leave for one season. Rest in peace, Lou Holtz, who, remember, 1976, went to coach the New York Jets, resigned with a 3-10 record, and said God did not put Lou Holtz on this earth to coach in the pros. And so, as you saw yesterday, when Lou Holtz passed, everybody he coached for put out touching tributes. And so Arkansas, Minnesota, NC State, Notre Dame, South Carolina, all places Lou Holtz served as the head coach. His press conferences were always hilarious. It's interesting because I think I'm the only one of us who was actually working in the business when Lou Holtz was still a head coach. And it was only very, like, he was the South Carolina coach at the time. He was almost done. But I feel like there's an entire generation who remembers Lou Holtz from the Reese Davis, Lou Holtz, Mark May postgame show on ESPN, wrapping up all the games on Saturday.
Yeah, that's how I... Well, I remember just growing up where I did, a lot of Catholics, right? And so I grew up a Notre Dame fan because of that. And so did most of my family. My dad still has his like 50-year-old Notre Dame starter jacket. So we grew up, and he's got books from Lou Holtz as well. So I kind of grew up around that when I was a kid. But I do, my defining memory sort of Lou Holtz is on ESPN arguing with Mark May. That's kind of how I sort of grew up around Lou Holtz. And you know, late in life, the last interview I had with Lou Holtz was, it has been a while. It probably was even before COVID, maybe in 2019, I feel like. You know, and it was obviously getting a little more difficult to interview him on the phone, especially. He was always good for a quote, that's for sure.
I have some of his best, and there's a couple that really stick out. The man who complains about the way the ball bounces is likely the one who dropped it. Never tell your problems to anyone. 20% don't care, and the other 80% are glad you have them. He had this unlimited well of these things and could command them instantly in his prime.
Holtz is a really interesting case study for me because I skewed somewhere closer to Ross's time where he was more of a television figure in terms of like how I received the sport. But then when I got into it, my interactions I think Holtz is going to be a case study in retrospect of like building the mythos of a coach and the idea of being larger than life. And then the idea of like what he says to players and how he represents himself. Cause like Lou Holtz is, It's a checkered and interesting case study of a human being
because
he's on the field for the
NCAA investigations after he finishes at a school. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of his actions and his words. It's funny, like as you go later in life, you run the risk of really putting the last and most permanent color on your legacy. And, you know, he became very aggressive in the political theater. A lot of his actions didn't match some of his words. I think what's fascinating to me is that he really kind of starts, he's the one who burnishes the mythos of this sort of superior statesman coach who is kind of above it all and, you know, preaches a certain selflessness and then doesn't necessarily, like, he got very political towards the end. He didn't always match his actions and his words. And I think that colors his legacy for a lot of people. And you know, like Ross, you talk about Catholic. I know Notre Dame fans have a lot of opinions about him, pro, con, sideways, and like how
they're not a monolith when it comes to Lou Holtz.
No. And honestly, like Lou Holtz kind of weaponized Catholicism towards the end of his life. And so he's an interesting case study to me because I think he's like the proto Tuberville of taking the revered authority figure coach and turning it into a political cudgel. So it'll be really interesting to see how he's remembered as we go on.
It's interesting though, because like he retired, you know, almost over 20 years ago.
Yeah, the South Carolina thing was that was
he could have gotten into politics if he'd wanted to. I think he would have been very effective.
I mean, he was in there. he campaigned for Trump aggressively.
But I mean, he could have run for very high office, and I think he could have won. because he would have been great on the stump. He was an incredible public speaker. Like he had the skill set that most of these politicians wish they had.
He sort of invented too the celebrity coach aspect, because the game had very much passed him by the time he was at South Carolina. And then he pivoted to television because of all the assets that you're talking about, Andy. He was so effortless in the way that he talked about things.
But he was not bad at, like, so he takes over South Carolina. They're terrible. And I believe
0-11.
Yeah, 0-11 his first season after replacing Brad Scott.
Yeah.
But then he got them good.
Yeah, they were pretty good. They were.
Yeah, no,
he handed off a good team to Steve Spurrier.
Lose deficiencies were more sort of the state of the game and off the field. And I think it was, I think the sort of deepening political demands of a job like that were starting to get at him. And he's going to be a really interesting case study, because he put off this grandfatherly visage and then at the same time, like, polarized so many people. So it'll be interesting to see how he's received in hindsight as we move forward in college football history.
Well, rest in peace, Lou Holtz. And we will be right now thinking up more jersey patches, I think. I think my whole weekend's going to be jersey patches.
Shiplap.
You guys. Shiplap. I want a shiplap helmet, if nothing else. Just one game, special game, homecoming, shiplap helmet. Done.
There you go.
Maybe the home makeover game, not the homecoming game.
Yeah. Oh. I'm telling you, there's reality the TV game? Potential.
You don't want to call your football program.
You don't want to call Baylor a fixer upper. Not in the last 20 years.
No. It's been fun, gentlemen. I'll talk to everybody on Tuesday.